Humboldt, everyone. Welcome to Humboldt Holding Up, the Lost Coast Outpost's attempt at a podcast. Are we doing it now? Okay. I think we're doing it.
we're on iTunes now, Steph.
Oh my gosh, we're real. We're really a podcast. It's official. My name's Stephanie McGarry.
And I'm Andrew Goff. You know, we are just a little bit over a month away from the November election, if you can believe that.
Oh my gosh, it is so hard to believe. There's kind of been a lot of other stuff going on this time.
Yeah, this is the weirdest year, month, day, everything's horrible.
I think it's always the weirdest. Yeah. Every day it's weirder than it was before.
So while a lot of the attention, as you know, has been focused on candidates Joe Biden and Donald Trump, there's a lot of stuff happening, a lot of local city council races, county supervisor race. There's some measures. And I feel like they're not getting as much attention, maybe, understandably.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right.
So in order to shine a little light on what's been going on, we have recruited a local political know-it-all, Eric Kirk, to join us here in the Zoom and talk about, you know, all of the things that aren't Biden and Trump and yet also Biden and Trump.
He's got to talk a little bit about Biden and Trump.
So let's get him in here. Eric, thank you so much for spending some screen time with us. Do you want to just give a brief introduction for people tuning in who might not be, you know, humble political insiders familiar with you?
Sure. My name is Eric Kirk. I'm a local attorney. I've been politically involved in various issues and campaigns in Humboldt County since, I guess, 1996, and starting in Southern Humboldt and more lately in Northern Humboldt. I think my more recent campaign that I was really involved with was Measure K, the sanctuary measure, which we passed a couple of years ago. Haven't yet got involved in any campaigns this time around, but I'm sure I'll get dragged into it before November 3rd.
Okay. There's still time. Still time.
I got to say, yeah, for as long as I've been what you might consider quasi-politically conscious in this county, I feel like you've been doing elections color commentary when the time comes, whether that be on KHSU or KEAT or KMUD. So we're honored for you to continue that tradition with us.
Yes, I do also, by the way, if anybody is interested, I do ballot proposition analysis of all of the state ballot propositions. I'm almost done with them. I'm down to two. Some of them are really convoluted and ridiculous this year. But if anybody wants them, they can reach me at ericvkirk@gmail.com. We'll be happy to send them to you. I should have them ready by Sunday.
Okay. And will you be posting these on your blog, So Hum Parlance Too?
On my blog, Redheaded Black Belt usually posts it, and also on Facebook. So,
now how is it that you became someone that Humboldt outlets turned to for analysis on such things?
Started back in, I think, 1998. I was, Estelle Fennell was the news director at KMUD back then, and she always used to call Les Scher, my senior partner, in to talk about the initiatives, but he didn't really like doing that, so he knew I loved politics, so he sort of sent me in, and I would give the analysis with Estelle interviewing me. That's actually how I got my radio show on KMUD. They said, look, we enjoy you, your analysis. Would you like to do a weekly or a monthly talk show? So I've been doing that since 2000. And I can't give my endorsements on there, though, because it's a nonprofit radio. Sure. But I do analysis and the rest. Yeah. And so that's pretty much how it started. And then I just got into the habit and people were asking me for them. And so it's just been something I do for fun. And apparently it helps people out. So
yeah, I mean, you mentioned you love politics, and another role I feel you play in our community that I want to ask you about before we get into election stuff is, you know, over the past few years, I feel like the number of people I know who are willing to engage with other people on Facebook in a respectful, nuanced manner has dropped to about zero. but I don't do it anymore, but I see you out there in the local Facebook groups slogging it out with these like essay length responses sometimes. Do you think social media is worth that level investment?
I think it's the wave of the future, and we got to figure out how to communicate with each other on it. I think it's, you know, the medium has probably led to a lot of division in this country because it's real easier to dehumanize somebody when they're not right then and there. It's easy to hit the send button. You know, in the old days, you might write a letter to somebody and then you wake up the next morning and say, yeah, do I really want to send that? But now you type out angry and then you hit send and then it's there and you can't take it back. So I always try to slow down. If I get upset about something, I like try to take a deep breath, and I encourage people to do that and try to conceptualize that acting as if you were right in front of them right then and there, because we act much differently in that medium. So I try, and I've actually had some really good discussions on Facebook and other forums.
I get the sense you see it as almost a duty to, you know, kind of model good online behavior and interaction.
It is the medium. It's replacing other forms of media. It's, you know, or maybe not replacing, but certainly becoming prominent. We got to figure out how we can communicate with each other on the medium, because it's not going away.
Yeah. So we'll get to all the candidates and the measures in a few, but I want to talk a little bit to start out just about the unprecedented nature of this cycle. Obviously, because of COVID, this is unlike any other election season we've ever experienced. And even though the decisions we make right now will be super critical, other than the presidential race, I feel like pretty safe in saying that I've never felt so much apathy toward like local issues. You know, I've been calling it the lost election, because it seems, you know, understandably, ain't nobody got time for city council races right now, and no space in their brain. How do you think the chaos around us affects how things are going to play out in November?
Well, you know, how it's going to play out, I imagine that people are going to be voting, because the presidential election is such a powerful force right now. I mean, everybody is paying attention to that, even people who aren't into politics. And everybody knows that they need to get their ballots in. And so I think they will take more interest as it goes along. But because of the pandemic, I think we got a late start in even covering the city council races. I mean, I was wondering if they were even going to happen. You know, it was like, it seemed like half the candidates got their applications in like days before. They were concerned about not having enough, you know, clear signatures to even qualify for the ballot. And all of a sudden we have 9 of them now, right?
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah.
Well, that's humble for you.
I mean, that is humble. Like, and so now we've already had one debate, and so people have to sort out who they're going to vote for. And it's just like last time, we had multiple positions for the Eureka City Council. I think Ward 1 had like 4, maybe 5 candidates. I don't remember.
I think four or five.
And there's been a couple of debates actually already. I think it's a little bit harder.
You might not know it, but
yeah, that's the thing about this too, with the local elections. You know, it's a little bit, it seems a little bit harder for people to realize that that's happening, just with this, with it all being on the virtual platform. So
you're right, Stephanie, and I'm plugged in, and I didn't even know about the second one. So I just, and I still need to familiarize myself with the candidates. There's still, I know a few of the candidates and the ones I would probably call the front runners, but I don't know for sure, you know, as to whether or not they should be considered front runners. I see the signs up but I really need to do some catching up myself. I'm so focused on the national campaigns.
Yeah.
I think that's been a lot of people. Yeah. Like you said.
So in regards to turnout, you think that the heat of the presidential election will outweigh, you know, the challenges presented by COVID as far as people getting out to the polls?
I'm seeing a lot of interest already. They've collected, I forget how many early ballots just for the few states that have already started voting. There's definitely a big interest. Whether or not that peters out, maybe everybody gets it in there because they want to make sure they get it in time, because there's all the fear about the mail and a lot of people wanting, for instance, those who would like to see Biden be president are worried that Trump is going to declare himself a winner, so they want to get their ballots in so they're counted by election day and all of this. And you know, with the really strange dynamics that are happening in this race that's like none other. I mean, we thought that 2016 could have been the weirdest campaign, and I don't even know if it compares to this one.
It's just going to keep getting weirder. I don't see how we get off this trajectory. Why don't you say we jump into some of these local races, and if we feel up to it at the end, we can maybe play pundit a little bit more with the Trump Biden race. You know, there's no shortage of commentary out there about it, but let's talk about Humboldt County Supervisor District 2 seat, which pits the incumbent, you mentioned someone you already mentioned, Estelle Fennell, against a challenger, Michelle Bushnell. This is a rematch of sorts from the March primary, when there were even more candidates, none of which managed to get to 50%. I don't know, any feelings on how this goes?
Well, I will assume that Estelle is the overall favorite to win. She came really close to getting the 50% then. And again, talking right and left in local politics doesn't always apply. I've actually had candidates who are more progressive on local issues, but I would like think twice about voting for if they were running for Congress, and the rest. But I would say that Michelle Bushnell would be considered to the right of Estelle Fennell. And most of the dissatisfaction with Estelle has come from what we would say to her left, and none of those candidates are left in the races. So it just seems like basically an unapologetic Trump supporter will have a hard time winning that district, even in Fortuna, where Estelle has a lot of support from the business community there. I don't see how it's even close. We'll see.
Yeah, and if you look at the other candidates that garnered votes in the March primary, it seemed like they were mostly, you know, to the left. So if those votes are redistributed, it seems to play in Estelle's favor. Yeah.
I would think so. I think it's probably going to be a blowout win. But again, I don't know. There might be people who, you know, just say, hey, maybe I'll vote for Michelle just to send a message so that it's close. It's a real dangerous thing to do if you don't really want somebody elected, you know. But thinking of the old movie Putney Swope, where there was one token black guy on the board and everybody voted for the black guy because they assumed nobody else would vote for the black guy, and he ended up the chairman of the board anyway. It just, it was a comedy, but, you know, there's some aspects to it. And I don't see that happening. I think most people are, if they're going to protest, they just won't vote at all. And most people will vote for Estelle because she's in there.
She's so Estelle has been a supervisor for 8 years now. Is that correct?
2012, she defeated Cliff Clinton.
Yeah, and I mean, what do you think have been the things that have kind of defined her tenure as supervisor?
She's a hard worker. Nobody doubts that. She went in as the HUM CPR candidate, for property rights. I think some of that end of the supporters in Southern Humboldt, we remember a local politician, Arcadis supervisor, city councilman, went to one of the meetings and said there was an unholy alliance between dope growers and developers. And she kind of fit into that because she was there is a libertarian aspect to Southern Humboldt politics that, they're against all the wars, they're, you know, for a lot of things, maybe even for national health care, but they tend to be libertarian when it comes to property rights because they all own property out there, and that's what they went out there to be left alone, and they want the county to leave them alone. I think some of them feel a little bit betrayed because of the way the cannabis thing is gone, and the abatement letters. I think people who are in the authorities are probably kicking themselves. You know, all that money spent on camp all through the 1980s and 1990s, all they had to do was send out abatement letters and was shut down the industry, right? You know, but in that case, that's what's happening. So I think that there's a feeling of that she's sort of like, there are people who were progressive that voted against her, voted for Cliff Clendenin, who said, I missed her hum CPR days, right? You know, so there's a little bit of a feeling of that, but enough to have Michelle Bushnell win. No, I think that she is considered, even though if you were to ask her about her national view, she's pro-choice, you know, probably supports the Democrats. I absolutely have no doubt. I haven't heard her say it, but I have no doubt she will vote, for instance, for Joe Biden, and you know, it would be considered a progressive Democrat. But locally, she's sort of considered in the conservative favor in local. Yeah. The chamber in Fortuna basically got her to run against Cliff Clendenin back then so that she would be the property rights candidate. Mm-hmm. And she's probably keeping them happy, but she isn't keeping everybody in Southern Humboldt happy. And that's going to be a challenge to her at some point in the future if they do actually bring up another candidate. But that's kind of what she's known as. And she votes with Bone and Bass more often than she votes with Madrone, you know, or Mike Wilson. Right. So it's going to be interesting, but I know that progressives have been looking for a progressive candidate who could have the appeal in Fortuna and be able to win in Southern Humboldt or get enough votes in Southern Humboldt to offset that. And Cliff Clendenin was a perfect candidate way back in 2008 because they were actually getting him to run against the incumbent at that time, Rodoni, because he was popular in Fortuna. He was his fourth generation, you know, does a lot.
Everyone likes apples.
Right, and progressive, but there were a lot of people in Fortuna who didn't vote for him the second time around saying, you know, I knew your father, known you as a kid, I really like you, but you're just too damn liberal. And and so, you know, it's just very interesting politics there, and they didn't necessarily vote for Estelle Fennell because at that time they thought she was a hippie from Southern Humboldt, couldn't be trusted, but I think they trust her now. And, and she works with everybody. I think that her legacy is that, but she definitely is not what you would call in the progressive, whatever that means, coalition.
I'll say it's going to be a pretty hard slog for Michelle Bushnell. I will say a few months back, I was taking a drive and I drove the entire length of Alder Point Road and the sign count. Michelle's got Alder Point Road pretty much locked up, I would say.
I would say east of the highway, she's doing pretty well. West of the highway is where all the back to the landers moved, though. That's
that's the divide. Have a
much harder time out there, and probably a much harder time in Fortuna because, again, the chamber really loves Estelle.
I'm having a hard time judging things based on signage this time around. Goff,
The sign game
my
is
house
is a little...
enough, or is it? Yeah, what is with that? Are people putting them up less? Am I just seeing them less because I'm?
I don't know. Do you have any yard signs this cycle, Eric?
I'm on kind of a quiet street. I put on yard signs towards the end of the campaign if they haven't been able to get it out, and I support them. I usually think it's a bad sign, but I'll let them put it in my yard, but not many people drive by my place. I'm in a quiet corner of Eureka, but I've seen quite a few signs in Eureka go up, but years ago, and my brain is not working right now, but there was a young man who ran against Rex Bone for city council. He tried to defeat Virginia Bass a few years ago.
Chris Kerrigan,
thank you very much. I drove through Eureka on his second campaign when he was being challenged by Rex Bone, and I just saw sign after sign after sign for Rex Bone, and I thought, oh, this is going to be a blowout, right? Yeah. But when you're not living in Eureka, the only streets you usually drive are the main business streets, the main thoroughfares, and that's where you have, if you have residential houses, they're usually landlords, tenant situations, and the landlords will come and plot those things on it, and people inside, if they're voting at all, might not be voting the way that sign is. It's actually a little bit of a controversy in Eureka and the rest, and Kerrigan blew him out of the water. So I don't know that that signs it. Now, Chris Kerrigan did it both times, walked every single house in the district, every single one. And that's how you can win now. And that's why, well, why I think things have gotten more progressive for in Eureka, because now even people who work full time can probably walk all of their wards with on the weekends before an election. Yeah.
So it's, Chris had those young legs. So let's move from the county to the county seat, Eureka City Council, Ward 2. This is the seat currently held by council member Heidi Messner, who is not running again because when the ward lines were redrawn back in 2018, her residence was drawn out of it. So open seat. We have three people running. We have Lucinda Jackson, Katie Moulton, and Dot Yeager, or I guess that's where the pronunciation we're going with. Yeager Wentworth sometimes. I can talk a little bit about these candidates, or you can. I don't know. What you have kind of the lay of the land here?
It's up to you. I have thoughts on it early on, but who knows how it's going to play out. I think Lucinda Jackson made a big mistake not showing up. The debate I know about last week, because it was all left-wing groups. She said it was agenda-driven. She gave up a chance to introduce herself. And Katie Moulton, I guess, is considered the progressive. I'm assuming you did name Tamar Shirley. Did he drop out?
He didn't.
He's just been a little MIA.
He has not been at any of the forums. He has not, he didn't respond to the Time Standard questionnaire. So yes, Tamar.
He's there on the ballot.
He's on the ballot, but he has seemed a little MIA.
Very young, as I understand, right?
Yes, that's what I gather.
But good for him for running. Maybe somebody needs to talk to him about it, because I have no idea what he stands for or anything.
But of the candidates that are showing up to things, Katie Moulton, who I think a lot of people know as Katie Texas, Kinetic Royalty. She got the Democratic Central Committee endorsement, which I feel like in the past is a pretty good indicator of, it seemed to have carried a lot of weight in the past. Do you feel that that's the case?
Eureka is a heavily Democratic city, not necessarily all progressive. Democrats aren't all left wing. There's a lot of moderates, a lot of older people who vote party because they were in labor unions and the rest. But it certainly is an indication that she's a heavyweight at the very least. And she probably have other progressive organizations behind her. So she has a good chance, especially if Lucinda and Dot are splitting the more conservative vote.
Sure. Dot's got the name recognition with her Yeager legacy here, maybe.
He's known as a fair, moderate guy. If she can benefit from that legacy, she could benefit from that. It's probably the most working class. I don't know, maybe Ward 1, but it's one of the two most working class districts. And that could play well for progressives sometimes and not so well. It just depends on.
For people that don't have the Eureka ward map just burned into their brain, Ward 2 is the called the Winco ward.
Yes.
So right.
All
yes.
All the houses kind of around that area.
And the challenge is getting them to vote. Ward 1 and Ward 2, I think, is going to be a big one. Getting them interested in election, feeling like they've got something to do. Now, they tend to vote in presidential elections when they're a working class, even if they skip others. We'll see. I think it's one of also the least white areas. How that will benefit anybody is hard to say. I would say Katie is the favorite just because of the way the city council race has been going even before the ward elections.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Things could turn around.
I mean, it seems like conventional wisdom, you could say that Lucinda and Dot might split the conservative vote if that is such a thing.
As happened in Ward 3, the last election, although it didn't matter because Natalie Arroyo got more than half anyway. It really doesn't matter. But it might be one of those cases where if we already had the ranked choice voting, the conservatives might actually benefit. It tends to be a progressive proposal, but doesn't always necessarily have to help progressives.
I mean, have you, so you watched the one, the more lefty forum, sorry.
The one at the labor, usually at the labor temple. I watched part of it. I haven't watched the whole thing. I need to watch the rest of it. I don't have a really good impression. I think Lucinda made a mistake by not being there.
Yeah.
But that's... Me.
Not even being there. She didn't have to be anywhere.
Right.
Done it from her own home. Do you think that has a lot of effect? I mean, how do you think that these forums being held in a virtual way could affect the outcome of these elections? I mean, do you think, I guess it sort of, it affects everybody evenly, but I wonder if people do feel like they have a harder time, getting to know these candidates, which obviously has some, you know, weight on how people decide to vote.
I mean, most people watch them on TV anyway, right? But it's tends to be more exciting to watch when they're both on all on a stage, and there's people cheering and stuff, which is usually a distraction. But it's usually gets people more into it. I mean, I'm a political junkie, and I found the conventions really boring this time around. Yeah. I was on my computer a lot doing stuff, watching them and the rest. And because usually I want to see what the crowd's doing, I want get a feel for the whole thing. So I think it's going to be a challenge for people to get their message across, because I don't know what the ratings are going to be for these things or how many people are going to watch them. They're going to want to do something, because I do think that, especially as it gets closer, people are going to realize, see all these signs up on everybody's lawns and say, who's that? Who's Scott Bauer? Who's it? I mean, it's just, me out of curiosity go to do it, but it might be that that their home websites have to be really informative and not just general and vague, because they can't be going door to door as much, or if they do, they got to be real careful. I'm not even sure if they're planning to do that, right? They can't hold big rallies. There aren't, so it's going to be a challenge getting the word out and the debates. I was fine with it, but I I'm into it. Somebody really wasn't into it, they might have watched 15 minutes of it and changed it to a ball game or something. It's just I don't know. We've never seen this before. We don't know how it's going to play out or what impact it's going to have or who's going to benefit. I don't want to pivot to the national thing just yet, but Joe Biden is running largely a virtual campaign, whereas Trump is having what Biden is calling the super spreader of events, right?
More people than Biden are calling
exactly
them.
And so what effect is that going to have on the electorate? I don't know. We don't know. We don't have anything to compare it with.
Yeah.
So Ward 2, I have you down for Katie for the win. Moving on.
At this point, I would lean in Katie's favor for the win.
I think that's a fair assessment. Yeah. Moving on to Eureka City Council Ward 4. This is the seat currently held by Council Member Austin Allison, who is not running for virtually the same reason as the last seat we mentioned.
He moved out of the ward.
There's that too. But it was also redrawn. And anyway, five-way race this time with candidates Scott Bauer, Eddie Morgan, William Tuttle, Liza Welsh, and Matthew in the middle, Owen. I figure whoever wins this probably does so with a few hundred votes. So I don't know. What do you think on this one?
It's going to be interesting, and you can win with a plurality in this one. It could be like the old Chilean elections where somebody wins with 33% of the vote. It could happen. If I was to venture a guess, just based on what I know and see, is I would say that Liza Welch and Matthew Owen are the front runners. But I don't know. Scott Bauer is a progressive as well as Liza Welch. I don't know what kind of constituency he has. I know her more than I know him, but that doesn't mean a whole lot. And William Tuttle, I see his signs all over the place. I'm not even sure where he stands or what his views are.
Don't discount the fact he made a lot of people's stomachs very happy over the years as the owner of the Chalet House of Omelets.
Yes.
So, yeah. I mean, that could that could factor in to people.
It could factor in. You know, it was actually has been one of my favorite places to go back before the
Absolutely.
Pandemic. You get a feel for old Eureka when you go there. It's a lot of older people going there, people that, you know, the hipsters don't tend to go there. And it's, if you want to get a feel for it, it's kind of nice. It's, you know, and decent food. Yeah, I think they're actually open in the Cutton one.
I think did I see the other one shut down?
At least I haven't seen it open when I've driven by, but I don't know.
That would be a tragedy.
365 days a year, I know.
Yeah. So, but sorry, we're talking about omelets. I'm like,
It's related.
Yeah. It is, and I love their breakfast much more than their lunches. But anyway.
let's just turn this into an ad for Chalet.
And I don't know how he's going to play into it. I don't know what his constituency is going to be, and it's hard to gauge because you can't go to events and look and see who's holding, you know, wearing his buttons and stuff like that. It's going to be hard. I don't know how that's going to turn out. Matthew is, you know, in the middle of, as you know, he's conservative on local issues, but he opposed the Iraq war. Like Estelle, he's nationally, he's liberal.
I was gonna say, how does, you know, and the in the middle is on the signs, like this is the branding he's going with. How do you feel about that moniker, Eric?
It could work for him, for people who are concerned about it. It might be a good theme for the state of the country right now, which is polarized, and having somebody kind of come in the middle and do that. But I think everybody knows who he is. Everybody knows who his wife is. Everybody knows who, you know, when he's been at victory or election night parties, everybody knows whose parties he's been to. Everybody knows that he is kind of on the older Eureka conservative kind of side of things when it comes to local issues. But I don't know, maybe he could sell it as being a little bit different, and maybe that'll work for him. I think the problem he has is Liza Welsh is a really strong candidate, really, if she could meet people, she makes a really good impression. She's young, and you know, with a lot of vitality, really wants to, is really optimistic about what she can do in the city council. And that's going to be a hard thing to beat, because people like that right now. So
Liza, you know, you mentioned Liza. So Liza is a land use planner with the county. And then, you know, the other thing we mentioned previously with Katie, she locked up the Democratic Central Committee endorsement. So again, that's I would tend to think. And again, this ward, Ward 4, again, for the map impaired, is kind of around the hospital and the parts of Myrtletown that are actually in the city limits. So it's more affluent part of Eureka, I would say.
It is, but probably Ward 3 is even more so. And yet Natalie Arroyo, defeated a really strong candidate. Well, you know, in John Fullerton, in that one, or at least somebody who more fits the profile that we associate with that. So I won overwhelmingly. I don't know, you know, how that's going to play in the fourth, but she is a very strong candidate. If she could be walking the precincts right now and not doing it, I would have no doubt that she could win. I just don't know how it's going to play out with all of this. And it'll be interesting to see how Matthew does. A lot of people know him. You know, he's well known.
His face out there, proud Rotarian.
Yeah.
Finance guy.
He's there. And actually shows up at the Democratic Central Committee meetings, usually as a proxy for Estelle Fennell. and so it's an interesting dynamic. He's actually been a Democrat, I think, all of his life, as opposed to Virginia, his wife, who switched probably about 10, 12 years ago, something like that.
So. And then the other two candidates that we haven't really talked much about, Eddie Morgan, owns a small business with his wife here in Old Town. Is one on the Human Rights Commission. Seemed strong in the forums that I watched. Scott Bauer is an environmental scientist with the California Department of Fish and Game. Again, seemed pretty up on the issues. Smart guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think that the that Liza Welch is of the personality type that especially the young progressives are going to really go for, and even some of the older progressives, you know, might be a tough time for Scott Bauer to be running. But I, you know, we'll see what happens between now and then. I don't think there could be any major scandals or anything like that. you know, I can't see what's going to come up, but it,
Matt will come up with something.
If some only.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. I don't know. If I was to have to put down a bet, I would say Liza Welch.
Okay, we got to head down for Liza Welch in
Ward 4. But I'm less certain about that than I am about Ward 2.
Right. Okay. And like you said, at least based on the last election, Eureka has been going in the direction a little bit more of a progressive council. Yeah. And so if we're following that trend,
I think it really backfired on the sort of conservatives last time around when they talked about what a hellhole, you know, Eureka is for all the reasons, the needles and the homeless and all that. And the progressives were able to say, you know, you were just empowered 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, do you think all this has happened over the past 2 years? You know, I mean, this has been happening over the years. And this is actually the first time there's been an actual progressive majority in Eureka since the socialist majority and, you know, during just before World War I. You know, I mean, there really hasn't been a lot of opportunity for them to make the difference. Now, granted, you know, the needle thing has become a big issue, but it really didn't work for them last time around.
It really did not. I think, you know, Leslie was running against Mantova back then, and that was the big test of those two messages, I think, and we saw what happened there.
Well, I don't know, you know, how you, it sounds like you're a Eureka person, so I don't know how much you pay attention to little Arcata, but I'm an Arcata gal, so uh-huh. So of course I've been following that. And, you know, talk about one where it's like, I just don't know. I mean, we have so many candidates. And I thought that maybe this was going to end up being relatively simple. I thought, okay, we have three seats because Susan Ornelas resigned early. Right. So we have this one open seat. Paul and Patino and Michael Winkler, both their seats will be open and they're both running for re-election. And I thought, okay, we have this. So, okay. You know, they'll probably both get their seats. And then we have this one other one. And I thought maybe only a couple of people were going to run for that. And then now we have eight other people running there as well. And, you know.
Yeah, and it's not like they don't run against individually. It's the whole group going for that little piece of the pie.
Exactly. So really, 10 people technically going for the three seats. And so let's see if I can even just get them all here. We have Sarah Schaefer, Kimberly White, Nick Matthews, Stacey Atkins Salazar, Emily Grace Goldstein, Camilla Zapata, Colin Yeo, and then Orion Peterson Jones, who has also been sort of our MIA candidate over there. He didn't show up for the one, Arcata forum that's happened so far.
Yeah.
It's a mouthful. But anyway, you know, the thing that's tough for me with Arcata is that it's all of the candidates seem to virtually have the same platform. You know, they're all progressives. They're all super, like uber progressives. And so I start to wonder, you know, how I can't even think about what to base my vote on sometimes with these candidates. You know, they're also, aside from the incumbents, it's all new people. You know, relatively unexperienced. I guess we have, you know, some of them are young, and a couple of them are a little bit older, you know, business owner types. But it's really a tough call over there. I mean, what are your thoughts?
I have no clues how that's going to pan out. And you mentioned that Mr. Winkler and Patino, you know, are incumbents and maybe favored. But again, Mr. Winkler took a lot of heat from progressives around the statue issue.
That is true,
And they have all the incumbents have taken heat over the unsolved death of Josiah Lawson. So how is that going to play in? But are there too many of those activists in there to really put together a solid block to remove the incumbent, you know, to be able to overwhelm the incumbency that they have, including, okay, it was only about a third of the people who voted for the statue, but they'll probably all vote for Winkler, right? You know? Yeah. It was, again, this is not a, you know, this is a very progressive place when you're talking about it, because most of the people who actually wanted the statue to come are also progressives. I don't really know. I know a couple of people who could be considered bona fide right wingers that were in that crowd, but it was, you know, older kind of classical liberal ACLU, you don't destroy art, you know, in history kind of liberalism. So my guess would be similar to yours, is that I do think that the two incumbents have a good advantage in this, is because I recognize some of those other names from different movements that have been involved, but they all are going after, I think, the same constituency. So I have no clue. And Arcata isn't always predictable, you know, within the context of its own politics. It's probably the most liberal spot in the county, or most left-wing spot. Maybe liberal isn't even the right word for that. But the people that they end up electing are rarely all that left-wing. A few times they have, but by Arcata standards, they're not. Everywhere else, they'd be considered communists, right? But Mr. Winkler would be considered, you know, left-wing in Eureka, even.
Exactly.
Yeah, but in Arcata, he's the quote-unquote conservative
guy. Yeah, I know. It's...
So I don't know. I think that when it comes to it, there's a lot of activism. I think a lot of people said, you know, do we really need a statue of somebody who was an obscure kind of president who would be considered obscure if he wasn't assassinated? And the statue probably wouldn't exist if he wasn't assassinated. Do we really need that if it's causing so much division? And so a lot of people who voted to get rid of the statue probably just said, yeah, it's a statue. Who cares, right? I mean, it's just, and so even they are not necessarily sharing the politics of the movement that was there to get rid of the statue, which is, within the framework of modern anti-racism, intersectionalism, and a lot of thinking that is kind of based on the campus and on the people who are attracted to Arcata because it's a college town. I just don't know how it's going to play out. I haven't had a chance to see the debate in the forums. I'd be curious to see if there were any kind of confrontations, but I just haven't,
They disagree. They disagree with each other. They're all so nice. They're just nice people. You know, it's interesting. You bringing up that the election. You know, with the measure on the McKinley statue. I think what was really interesting about that election too is that there was a lot of push for HSU students to get really involved in that, right. And it was an issue that I think drew a lot of votes from HSU students, which I think, you know, comparatively they might not always participate in the local elections so much, and not even necessarily change their voter registration to the area. And then I'm thinking about this year, we have so many less HSU students than we normally would. You know, I'm really wondering how that is going to affect the outcome.
Back then you also had the students were very interested in Measure K. There's a lot to take them out, and yeah, you're right, probably the bulk of them are at home right now, so you know, doing it online, and you know, if they do turn out, how many of them are there? I don't even know. You know, it's I know there are quite, you know, I work on my office is on Bayside Street, and I'm so used to, it's almost like a video game. Usually try not to run them over because they're all over the streets, you know, but this year they're hardly, you know, there may be four or five of them when I'm driving by there. It's not going to make Arcata move to the right. That's not going to happen, but it definitely, but the activist candidates are probably not going to get the support that they would have, but for the pandemic, I think you're right.
Yeah, I think you're right. Under the circumstances, incumbency is going to be just the end all be all. And then, so, you know, Patino and Winkler get in there, and then, yeah, just a crapshoot on this.
Right.
You know, I still am not sure, you know, who I'm going to vote for. You know, I'm a pretty big fan of Paul Patino, so, you know, I think he's in there. I actually really, I do often support the way that he votes, you know, in the council decisions. I'm still, I don't know how I'm feeling about Winkler right now, but, you know, yeah. I'm still not sure, you know, of the other candidates who I feel strongly about, but I'm starting to think that maybe, you know, some of these business owners might have the advantage, like Stacey Atkins-Seltzer or even Nick Matthews. I mean, just again, because of that recognition in the community, which I think is going to have maybe an even bigger, be a bigger factor in this election than it necessarily would have been in the past. And then with also the HSU students not being around.
Yeah. I don't know. Winkler is an interesting guy. I think he's got a little bit of the similar factor as Biden, who got nailed by his vice presidential candidate in that first debate, because he was still talking and feeling the politics of way back when he opposed busing, you know, had to work with basically, you know, racist politicians because they were part of the party and they were part of the body politic. Winkler sometimes talks from that generation and it gets them into trouble. I had conversations with him during the statue thing and, you know, I was like, and he's a real smart guy, real level headed. And, you know, but I just kept coming back to, but it's just a statue. You know, just yeah. You know, and I was saying, you know, why allow this division in the thing because of a statue? It can go to an, I'm sure it can find a nice home. And, but he felt very passionate about it and expressed himself really well, I thought. You know, because of terminology he used, turned off, you know, a lot of the younger, particularly the younger crowd. And that's something that politicians of that age are going to have to contend with. Even Bernie Sanders has gotten into a little trouble sometimes with that, you know, and the young people love him, right? You know, so.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So I guess, you know, on to talking about some of the local measures, if we want to touch on that. We spent so much time talking about the candidates because it's just so fun.
Right, it's fun.
But, you know, like in Arcata, I think that probably the big one is Measure F this time, which was, you know, just it's the same text as Measure R, which didn't quite pass in the last election. It would approve a special tax to fund the Arcata Fire District. And do you have any strong feelings on that?
It's another one that needs the 2/3 vote, right?
Yes,
that's hard to get.
Yeah,
to get 2/3 of people to agree on anything.
But man, they're pushing hard on this.
Yeah.
Well, last time they got very close. I mean, I think they got, you know, what was 62% or something, 63%.
Well, we've had some, now two very serious fire seasons since then, since 2018. That might be a factor.
You got to fund these things.
So, you know, I would say that it's, you know, I work in Arcata. I would say that it's, that a lot of people are going to want that to pass. I imagine the business ownership would like want it to pass. I don't know that students would vote against it. You know, it's just, you got to get... people who are enough doing it. And if they came that close before, I don't know. It's hard for me to say, but I would have predicted it would have passed in 2018, to be honest. So I'm kind of curious as to why it didn't. And did the students just not vote on it or whatever?
And then we had it actually since in the primary, they had Measure R. I think you're talking about Measure I think it was A, okay. I want to say,
right.
got close to maybe 50%. And then they had it again on this last, in March. And that was when it got close.
Didn't quite make it.
Yeah, exactly. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, and that's after real fire season last fall. So, although some of these fires are a little bit closer to home, I mean, you know, but Hard for me to say. I don't know. I would think it probably has a better chance passing in the general election because there's a bigger turnout, and bigger turnouts usually make it okay for taxes because particularly lower income people don't seem to mind even sales taxes as much as rich people. I don't know why that is, even though it's regressive. But and I assume that's what it is. It's a sales tax or a property tax?
It's actually a property tax. Oh. Yeah.
Then they'll definitely vote for it. So
yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that too, with the a general election versus a primary.
The general elections is why, when you want to have your ballot propositions on, if you're coming from a progressive point of view, it's a lot harder with the others, the off years and the special elections or the primaries.
I'll keep that in mind next time I'm doing this.
Yeah, it's why we have 12. I wondered how we were going to even have any, because how did they all get their signatures? I'm kind of wondering about that. They must have gotten them early before the pandemic, but anyway. Mm.
Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, gosh.
Don't ask.
Yeah.
I mean, as somebody who was involved in trying to get the signatures for Measure K, it's a big deal. It's hard. It's harder than you think. I mean, it's just, it's a lot of work. So anyway.
Yeah.
We also do have Measure C in Eureka.
I was just going to say, we'll
get to that.
Yeah. We'll move back over to Eureka for Measure C. This would, for those who don't know, this would allow future candidates for mayor and city council to be chosen by ranked choice voting or instant runoff voting. These are the same thing, I'm pretty sure.
Similar.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see if Eureka figures out how this works, because, it seems... I remember back in college, I had to give a persuasive speech, and the topic that I chose was ranked choice voting, and that was a lot of years ago. I remember having it all where I could explain it very well. It's a little harder for me to do now. Maybe you could do a little bit better. How do you feel about the ranked choice voting area?
Sure, I'll try to do it. And by the way, it's in place in San Francisco, Berkeley, Oakland. Mm-hmm. That's been in place for a while there. There was a bit of a lag because it was hard to explain to all the voters exactly what they needed to do once they got into that ballot box. Also, Maine, I guess, is going to be the first state to have a presidential election on ranked choice. There was even a lawsuit to try to say it didn't apply, and it lost, so it's going to be ranked choice. Ranked choice is, or as they call instant runoff, is basically you vote, if you've got 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 candidates, you vote. You get to vote for how many you want to, you have your first choice, your second choice, your third choice, and basically the way it goes is the first count, everybody's first choices are counted. And if no candidate has over 50, if anybody has over 50% of the vote, it's done. It's just like any other election. If nobody has more than 50% of the vote, then they have another round of counting where they knock the lowest off, the person with the lowest votes off. Then all the people who cast votes, their first vote for that person, their second votes would be counted in. And then if still nobody has that, and until you get down to where somebody actually moves over 50%, you keep going down the line. So if there are only 3 candidates, there's only going to be 1 round. If they have a plurality, the one that had the lowest number of votes, their second votes, everybody voted for that candidate, their second votes will be counted, and at that point there will be somebody over 50. But there's a lot of confusion around it. And I've already done a couple of radio shows on this where people are calling up and saying, well, can we vote for one candidate for, like, if they're all 3 rounds or all, four? And I was like, well, you can, but it's just the same as if you only listed one candidate at all, right? And trying to explain to them that your first round vote is still counted. Your first choice vote is still counted until your first choice candidate is no longer in. And it's a hard concept to get through to people so that they can understand it. But in the places that have done it for a few years, voters are finally getting it. And, a lot of people didn't do that. They would say, well, I just want him and only him. And they would write write that name on all of them and the rest. But I think it's caught up where that's happening less and less. Mm-hmm. It's cheaper. You don't have to have a runoff. It basically works like our supervisor elections, except just in one place.
And I guess
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, the best pitch that I've kind of heard in favor of it is, you know, it allows you to vote your heart, right? Like, so, you know, in our two-party system, everyone complains about having, you know, like, neither Trump nor Biden excite me. I have to vote for one of them, though. You know, and so ranked choice voting in some ways maybe solves that. It allows you to vote for a candidate that without feeling that you're throwing your vote away, because then that vote, if that candidate does not make it, they will be reallocated to a candidate.
And explaining that on the radio show, the caller that I had was saying, well, but I can still split the vote. If I vote for the Green Party person, then you know, and then the Republican can win in the first round. And I have to explain, well, if the Republican has more than 50% of the vote, it doesn't matter. You know, there's nothing to split. You're splitting the minority of the vote anyway, and you got to explain it. And it's not that people are dumb; they're smart. It's just it's a different concept, and you got to really. There has to be a really strong education curve. So if it does pass in Eureka, then there's got to be, I think, not just the elections department, but all of the people who advocated for it really have to go on an education campaign, maybe even have workshops that people can come to if we ever have meetings or virtual workshops or whatever, so that you can do sort of pretend ones elections to kind of show how it works. And I think it's fascinating. It could save a lot of money. You have one election. Yeah. And you're right. You get to vote your conscience. And pragmatically at the same time. I mean, it's just, and it that could benefit third parties. It could actually lead to more third party candidacies, because people are often saying, God, if everybody voted for the Libertarian Party who said they're going to vote for the Libertarian Party, the Libertarian Party will win. Well, if they're right, they'll probably win then, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, all of a sudden they say, wow, all these people who would vote Libertarian.
But now in Eureka, the Measure C, though, this would be specifically for city elected officials, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to be clear, I mean, it wouldn't be like Eureka just also gets to do this for a presidential election.
No.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, we can't do that. First of all, we have statewide, it's not instant runoff. It's the, you know, where the top two vote getters get to run against each other. A different system, and this would contradict that system, and the state overrides it. They tried to argue that for the state of Maine, it was Republicans who didn't want it say, hey, this is a federal election that, you know, it runs against federal election rules. And the court basically, there really is no federal election. Every state decides how its people are done. And if this is how the legislature of Maine has selected to do it, then the Constitution says that's how it's done. But localities within within California would still have to honor that unless the whole state becomes.
So then what advantage do you think this has much in a local election? I mean, are you in support of this for a local election?
Well, it would, you know, like, look at the city council races right now. It's very possible. Last time was actually kind of a miracle that you know, we had three city council races and a mayor's race, and only one of them was a plurality, Leslie Castellano. But and she was just barely under 50. It was still a convincing win, but it makes it harder to govern if you only win by a plurality. I mean, you know, I think it's an extreme example, but that was the argument used against Salvador Allende. He only got 37% of the vote, right? Well, it didn't matter that every candidate before had won that way because it was a multiple party system, but that was used against him. But you don't have a mandate if you win by it. It was used against Cliff Clendenin when he won with 48%. In 2008. So it guarantees that you've got somebody with more than 50% of the vote. I think that's an advantage to it then and there. And you don't split votes. In Ward 2, if you're progressive and you want to support Lucinda Jackson, but you're worried about splitting the vote and you want Scott, you'll choose Scott Bauer as your second, then you know that your vote is going to be a progressive vote and not a progressive breaking vote. right? Yeah. It's just a progressive splitting vote. Same thing with the conservatives, you know, on that Lucinda and Dot. You know, they right now are probably going to split the conservative vote or whatever, however you define it. And this would give them an opportunity. It basically unites them. It doesn't really, you know, because it would be their first and second choice. So, you know, it progressives beware. It's a double-edged sword.
I think, Steph, you have a couple of ranked choice voting fanboys over here. So
change the dynamics to the election too, because you don't want to attack somebody. You don't want to be the one attacking the other candidate, right? You know, because they might say, okay, yeah, you've convinced me that from your attack that person is a jerk, so I'm not going to vote for that person.
Yeah, but you want their supporters. You need their supporters. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you're going to be my backup choice. You know, so it's just, it could actually help lead to more elevated political campaigns, at least it's the hope. And I think it's actually happened that way in San Francisco. They don't attack as much as they used to.
I like that. Bring on the ranked choice. All right, well, let's move on to the other Eureka measure, Measure H, which would extend a 1.25% sales tax in order to fund essential services like fire, medical, police, youth and senior services, and more. You know, I know that with COVID decimating the city budget, people are really worried about this, what they want it to pass. The literature predicts this raises over $9 million annually for the city. I don't know. Can you talk about the importance of a measure like this?
Well, we've had problems. We tried to pass a measure of the sales tax in 2018, didn't pass, and everybody complains that the roads aren't being repaired, right? You know, so that's it. Or that a fire department station has been closed. And like I said, I'm not on nonprofit radio right now, so I can say, you know, I want to
let loose, Eric.
And so, I think that people have to realize, given that the budget shortfalls, that we need to do this. It means we need to, you know, that there's going to be a little bit more in taxes, but we need to do it. I think Eureka, is going to do it again. It's at 2/3 though. That's a big chunk. I mean, that's, you know, I can understand wanting 55% for these measures, but 2/3 is really a burden. And it just takes, you know, kind of a strong push against it from people who aren't normally the tax policy type people. It gets defeated, and, you know, there are, you know, questions about, well, is the city spending it right or whatever? And it's like, well, they got to have it to spend before they spend it right or wrong. I have a feeling, I think it'll probably pass. It's going to be a big turnout and the rest, but it's desperately needed. I mean, we are really short on all kinds of services.
We're going to buzz through these measures because we're getting a little long, but we'll do this this county one real quick. Measure I, which would allow Humboldt County to pursue state and federal funding to build affordable housing. I guess because of some dumb old thing in the California Constitution, you have to go to the voters to ask for permission for something like this?
To do that, yeah. I don't see why anybody would vote against it. I mean, you know, we either get the funding or we don't. It's it doesn't cost very much to get it. But yes, in order for us to do it, because some of them might be in form of loans that have to be paid back, and maybe that's part of it. But I think that that's going to pass. We need affordable housing badly.
Okay. We'll just keep rolling here. We don't have a lot of time to get too deep on the many state propositions, which is good because that's what I feel least qualified to speak about. But you know, I guess I could just turn it over to you. And it's just like, you know, on the topic of state propositions, which ones do you think are important that people should be paying attention to?
Oh, God. And they're so convoluted. And quite frankly, sometimes I'm trying to figure out what the measures are, what's in them, I almost think, you know, just vote no. There's supposed to be a single issue rule. I actually think that ballot measures, except for maybe boilerplate stuff, should be able to fit on one page, because otherwise people don't know what they're voting on. And some of them are simple. One of them, you know, like the first one, Prop 14, is to renew funding for stem cell research. A little bit of concern that, you know, the benefits of it are being overblown, you know, that we're a long ways away from any cures. But, you know, people might want to still spend money on that. It's science. We're learning from it. And there is some progress. It's just not the progress everybody hoped for by now. Mm. You know, and you've got Prop 15, which is...
Seems like the big one.
Yeah. That's the big one. That's the one that, because it touches the third rail of California politics since 1978. I remember when it passed, and I was in the eighth grade then, and two of my teachers got laid off at the end of that year, right away after it passed. I mean, and this is going to loosen it up a bit for, it will allow, I mean, under Prop 13, if you buy a building or a real property, you can't be reassessed at its current market value. It's only going to be assessed based on the value in which you bought it, with some exceptions and the rest about, you know, the rest. And this would basically say, if you have a commercial property that's worth over $3 million, it will be assessed at the current market value. And that's going to lead to higher taxes on those buildings. And it's a big controversy. The Jarvis scan people, you know, those that are left are freaking out about it because they always thought that they had a total, you know, grip on politics. It seems to be favored in the polls. And they're worried not even just about this measure in particular, but it'll open up others. They'll say, well, what about residents over 3 million? You know, why don't we make this more progressive and have rich people pay more, you know? And but the fact of the matter is my parents, who were progressive in the anti-war movement and all of that, voted for Prop 13 because we would have been priced out of our house because the property tax just kept going up and up and up. So there needed to be some type of control. But back then, you didn't have the practice of, well, let's throw out a more moderate measure and see if voters will go for that instead of the more extreme measure. You had this extreme measure, and all of a sudden, you know, California's schools went from the top 5 to the bottom 10 within like a decade because of the lack of funding, because of overcrowded classes and the rest. And gradually, we found ways to fund education, but it's still really hard to fund, you know, services in this state because of it. And so it needs to be loosened up a little bit, not too much. And this looks like a good measure for a lot of people to say, yeah, if you've got a commercial property that's over $3 million, you can pass it off to businesses who will pass it off to consumers, spread it around, and it'll bring more income, you know, for schools and for local jurisdictions, including ours.
Yeah. I want to move on, and we'll just tell people that you have your they can look for your analysis coming out on all the propositions, just because we're getting a little long in time, and because I promised you the opportunity that we could talk about the thing that everybody wants to play armchair quarterback on, which is Trump or Biden.
I don't even know where to start there. Right now, Biden is holding firm in polls. With a little bit of variance for the past 3 months, everybody says, well, didn't the polls say that Hillary Clinton was going to win? No, they didn't. That is a myth. The polls, with the exception
of the state level.
Even on a state level, the polls in Wisconsin are the only ones that were outside the margin of error. Michigan was close. Everybody was close. It did not say that Hillary Clinton was going to win. Some of the projection people were saying that, but like 538, Nate Silver was saying, well, yeah, our numbers say that, but I'm seeing some intangibles here that we haven't worked into our formulas. I'm a little concerned that Trump could win this. And even though his system gave it a 71% win, they all seem to be pretty confident that they figured out that they've recalibrated the likely voters and the rest. And the thing is where Trump underperformed against the polls was in the Sun Belt states, California, of course, Nevada, Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, and Texas. That's actually where polls had Hillary Clinton doing worse than she actually did. And if that plays out this time around with Joe Biden, there's a possibility he wins Texas, and there's no way Trump could win the election without winning Texas.
And he's looking good in Arizona too.
Yeah, Arizona, right. And Latino voters were basically undercounted in the likely voter scenarios. Have they accounted for that with their formulas this time around? We don't know. Have they accounted for the white working class people that were not considered likely voters in the Rust Belt? But we don't know what effect that's going to have, because actually Biden is doing much better with white working class voters. That's actually the biggest break out of Trump's voting, is white working class voters in the Rust Belt. And he seems to be doing really well in it, but who knows what's going to happen here.
The thing I worry about that seems it's going to throw off every polling model is just COVID. You know, we don't, the voting habits how do we even know how people are going to respond to this unprecedented obstacle in their way?
I think some of the states are breaking records for early voting. But
you saw those lines in Virginia are pretty impressive.
Yeah, but we don't know. We don't know that. We don't know how a lot of other things are going to do. And actually, some of the people, Nate Silver, for instance, says that Biden has to really win the national vote by at least 4% to be able to really guarantee an Electoral College win and the rest. And we don't know what's going to happen on Tuesday with the debate. I think the Trump people have made a big mistake with this whole dementia Sleepy Joe line because it's lowered the expectations. All he has to do is like be confident and it'll look brilliant, you know, that type of thing. But we just don't know. Will Joe Biden take the bait? Joe Biden even said, I hope I don't take the bait, right? You know, to get in on Trump's level. That was one thing, you know, how you can criticize Hillary Clinton's campaign, but she handled Trump in the debates really well. It was after the debates were over and the Comey letter came over that she really started to lose ground. Does Biden have the discipline she had? Does he have the gravitas in debating? We don't know.
I mean, you put forth the debates as maybe being a facet here, but I you know, one aspect of Trump's presidency is that everybody seems to already be decided. You know, more so than ever before. Like, is the debate performance really going to factor into how people?
There's probably about 4 or 5% people who go back and forth who are undecided, but it's probably not. We don't even know where they are.
Yeah, who are these weird people?
I mean, Saturday Night Live even had a joke about that, about them not being able to make minds about anything, you know, but you know, asking the waitress, you know, questions all night long. Who has not got their mind made up? it'll be about turnout, really, and who's energized and, you know, with this really the loss of what I consider to be probably our best Supreme Court justice ever. And that's saying something, you know, because Brennan and Marshall were always my heroes when I was in law school. They died just before I went to law school and the rest. But with her loss, who is that going to galvanize? What is going to make the right wing more energized, because if the Republicans have their way, they're going to have that vote before the election. So, a lot of people are saying, I can see people saying, okay, well, I get my Supreme Court majority, but I also don't like Donald Trump because I'm a religious conservative who believes that people, you know, should not act the way Trump does. And that there are there are some Republicans, some of the never Trumpers as they're called, doing that. I don't know. I would, my feeling is that Biden will win the election. Of course, will that even matter if there's the military coup that he was doing?
All norms and conventional wisdom out the window.
You've said it a bunch of times, and I think you've really just summed it up, Eric, which is that the theme of this election is we just don't know.
We don't know.
We just don't know, because it's all so, so unique. It's all, COVID just brings in this different element that we have absolutely no basis of comparison.
COVID is getting better. Will that help Trump? If we're going into a second wave, as there's actually some preliminary indications we might be, how is that going to happen? I noticed that Florida, Biden was ahead longest when people were getting hit the hardest. Now it's easing up a bit. Is Trump picking back up again? I don't know.
But by the time we post this, it will be 36, 35 days until the election. Like, we're here. This is it. This is what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
You know, unless there's some October surprise.
It is. It's fascinating to watch. It's terrifying to watch, you know, and we've seen signs of civil war. I used to kind of joke at that, but I don't know what's going to happen. What happens if Trump does lose and some of these people feel like it was stolen from them?
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen.
I feel pretty good in the Humboldt bubble. I take comfort in our area being a little bit more level-headed, but I don't know.
I think we are. I think it's, yeah. I would be more, there are other places I definitely more worried about that. Oregon even, some strange things have happened there, but this is really, thank you for inviting me it gets me thinking about these things and talking about them. And, democracy demands a lot of individual citizens. And if you take it seriously, it takes work and it's really hard. And I always tell people, when I'm giving my recommendations out, don't just follow my recommendations. Try to read the analysis, try to make up your own mind. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before, just to really try to do that. And I know it's hard because there's so much on the ballot in California always.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
We have this direct democracy experiment with referendums, which sometimes I think is really good, sometimes not, because it's maybe too easy to change the Constitution in California. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Eric, for coming and just sharing your thoughts with us going on.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
On everything we could possibly cover in this time.
Kind of like those dorm room college discussions, right?
I didn't have a beer. I failed to beer.
This would have been a good beer one. And people, of course, they can check out, as you were saying, more of your thoughts on your blog.
Yes.
Which is Soham Parlance.
But if you Google Eric V. Kirk, that's it. And again, Google if you Eric want him directly, send it to ericvkirk@gmail.com. Right. Make sure you get the V in there, because poor Eric Kirk is this kind of conservative guy in the East Coast who's tired of getting money.
Other Eric Kirk.
Yeah.
All right.
That's good.
All right, Eric. Thank you so much. And election night. It's coming quick at us.
Coming pretty soon, and I look forward to seeing more of these podcasts. I really enjoy them. So.
Oh, okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Eric.
We appreciate that.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
All right. Well, thank you so much again, Eric, for joining us and taking us on a whirlwind tour of all the local council races, a lot of the local measures, some of the state measures even, and then of course even just a teensy little bit of the presidential race.
This is normally the point where I would encourage people to vote, but if they made it to our podcast, I don't think I need to encourage them.
We'd probably be preaching to the choir on that one. But just in case, hey, make sure you're registered to vote, and that you're all your information is updated. And then, as usual, make sure you're wearing a mask and practicing all that safe stuff. You don't want to die before the election, so hey.
Okay, well, yeah, Steph, good to see you, good to hear you, I guess.
You too. It's been real.
We'll see you all next week.
All right, bye-bye.